Kitty Hart Moxon, excuse me, Veal 8.
Yes, we were 100 Auschwitzers, and the other 200 who were brought into the cattle truck with us seemed to have been on a different list. And when it came to dividing us in Grosshausen, our 100 was taken on foot to a small factory with a small camp on the outskirts of the town called Reichenbach. The other 200, which I didn't know at the time, were apparently taken to Schindler. Now, whether they were the original Schindler women or whether they were the other 200, I really don't know. But this is documented in the big Auschwitz book, the chronological Auschwitz book. It's actually documented that 200 went to Schindler that particular date, and the 100 went to Grosshausen, that is my 100. Well, I didn't know that at the time, and what we didn't know at the time either, that this particular area, again, had been designated the rearmament area. They were all relocated, all the armament industries, all from Auschwitz and all from parts of Germany, had been relocated to this area, between the Oder and the Neisse line of Germany. The reason is because the Allies were approaching from the west and the Russians from the east, and so they brought the armaments factories closer there, and there were no less than 100 subcamps in that area, and Grosshausen being the base camp. And most of the Auschwitz was actually evacuated into this area, or at least people who were able to work. Now, we were brought to this very small camp and worked we didn't quite know what we were actually producing in this factory. It supposedly had been a Telefunken, which was a radio factory, but we think we were making aircraft parts at the time, and it wasn't particularly difficult. It was quite dangerous work that I had to do. I had to change cylinders of carbon dioxide that had to be sort of replaced, and they were liable to sort of overflow and explode. People got burned, and I got burned on my hand. But I think the worst of it in that particular camp was there was no means of organizing any food. You see, I don't know if it's actually realized that more prisoners died these last 6 months of the war than they died in all the camps. I'm not talking about the people who had actually been brought in to kill. I'm talking about prisoners. More prisoners died these last 6 months. I believe there were about 250,000 prisoners that were sort of shifted around from place to place, and about half of them died these last 6 months. And much of this, of course, was due to starvation, just like in Belsen, because they just didn't bring any food in. In Auschwitz, was pretty well self-sufficient. All this was coming into the camp from all over, and there was some means of somehow getting hold of something. Well, once you went in small camps, this was no longer possible. There in Reichenbach, again, we were down to one slice of a tiny piece of bread and camp soup. And even that wasn't really adequate, nowhere near adequate. And, you know, we were really on a starvation diet just there. Fortunately, most of us were in better shape. I was actually in better shape when I left Auschwitz, I think, than when I actually came in. And because I sort of recovered in the Canada section, where, you know, I was piling in food as soon as I could get it, as much as possible, because we didn't know what was sort of going to happen. So I sort of recovered there. Not my mother. She was in a pretty bad state by that time, because of course she couldn't have a proper diet. You know, yes, she wasn't starving at the time, because I did manage to help out, but I did manage to get a better variety of food, I think, at the time, or at least the last few months. Anyway, what happened in Reichenbach is we there was only 100 of us, I'll explain. We all lived in one room, sort of one dormitory, and that was about 2 to 3 hours walk into town Well, every morning we used to pass the bakeries. I think that was the worst thing I remember. We had a smell of this gorgeous bread, and because we were absolutely starving, we used to be able to pinch bread from the actual guards that were guarding us quite often. We used to snatch it out of their out of their haversacks. We had one of our girls, and she was marvelous at it. She could get it from these SS women when we were walking, and they never knew that, you know, that she was doing this. In the factory itself, we were not allowed to have contact with anyone. We were watched the whole of the time. But I was working next to a German woman, and very often she would actually bring me a sandwich, but she wasn't allowed to pass it to me. And what she used to do, she put it under a shelf for me, and I was able to pick it up and then hide it somewhere and take it back to the camp and share it out a little bit. So that was the only help I really received from a civilian at that particular time, because they could have helped quite a lot if they really wanted to. We were not allowed, for instance, to go to lavatories, anything like that. There was what happened there is at a certain time the SS woman would collect all these prisoners up and say, "No, time to the lavatories." So when they used to take us to the lavatories, we used to try and get to have a bath. At the same time, we had these tiny little containers, and in turn, we used to have a bath in a tiny little container, go into the lavatory and try and wash, because again, we didn't have any running water back in this little tiny camp. Anyway, another thing happened there, that's right. Of course, we're talking about winter, 1944-1945, it was about December, it was very, very cold, and again, there was this heating channel, and we decided we must make a fire now and again. We must be able to heat this place up. And so we started chopping up the boards of our beds there in this place, so much so that in the end, we only had about two planks and a straw mattress, you know, with a hole in the centre. And one day there was an inspection, because they had this inspection, and they noticed that we were burning the boards. And because we had the most awful punishments, and I remember my friend who now lives in America, she had quite long hair by that time, and they decided to shave her hair off as a punishment, so she actually had to pay for it. But we got away with quite a lot of sabotage there, also in the factory, because we didn't actually do any constructive work. I mean, yes, I had to change these cylinders and things, but a lot of our girls managed not to do the work. So there wasn't any constructive work going on there. What we didn't know at that stage, we didn't know where the war was, where the front was, where the front line was. We suspected, of course, that Auschwitz had been evacuated because of the approaching Red Army. We had no idea how far away they were. In fact, they were very near, so much so that apparently on this 17th of February, Grossrosen, which was the base camp, had already been liberated or occupied, whereas we were still in the camp. And we didn't know that Auschwitz had been liberated already at the end of January, because we didn't know. What happened was that there was a roll call, and without any warning whatsoever, we were to be evacuated from this particular camp. This happened on the 18th of February. I know the date extremely well because it was my mother's birthday. And she remarked, "Oh, this is my birthday present. We're going for a walk." What she didn't realize was we were going on a death march, because they didn't say where we were going, how long we were going. There was no food issued whatsoever. We were to drive them out. And as we were driven out, we thought we were only 100 of us, you know, in a small camp. We seemed to be joined by thousands and thousands of other women. And that's when we began to realize that we are not an isolated camp. There are lots and lots of camps there. And there was this general evacuation from this whole area. And the other thing that transpired, that I did say they relocated all the armament factories there. Most of the prisoners were actually working in caves in the mountain range itself, because that was the border of Czechoslovakia, very near the frontier of Czechoslovakia, on the Sudeten mountain range. And a lot of the men were working excavating, and they had these military installations. They even had the most sophisticated installations that they had in Parneminde, with the V2 bombs, I believe, that they had a plant there. And they were also building the new Hitler's headquarters there. And what's more, they had 27,000 prisoners working on the Hitler headquarters, which is only just being researched now, because a lot of these caves had been sealed off after the war because they were dangerous, and they're just beginning to open them up and to see what's inside. A lot of the caves had railway lines inside and electrical installations, and so this is all being researched. Well, we didn't know this at the time, but we were joined by this enormous number of women, and we believe there were about 10,000 of us when it came to this particular evacuation. Apparently the evacuation was in three stages there, and this Commandant Hess, he was in charge of this whole evacuation, and he decided to evacuate this area on the 17th or the 18th of February, which was well after the final evacuation of Auschwitz, because I was no longer in Auschwitz, but I do know, of course, what happened there. Their main evacuation was the 17th of January already, and of course most of the people died during this death march. Our evacuation happened on the 18th of February, and they walked us out. I expect we had absolutely no provisions whatever. Neither did we know where we were going, and neither did, I think they didn't know where we were going either. We couldn't walk along, we were not taken along the main roads, because the main roads were blocked with military convoys and civilians running away. You see, they were fleeing, quite a lot of them on foot, some on bicycles, but mostly on horses and carts, and all the processions were on these carts. And so we were driven along side paths, along villages, and so we never knew where we were. And of course, you can imagine a column of 10,000 women, it just stretched for miles, and people that were lagged behind were immediately shot, and of course they were told, anyone lagging behind is going to get shot. Anyone trying to escape is going to get shot. So we tried very hard to stick together, and we, 100, tried very hard to stick together. We tried successfully, I mean we did successfully, and we tried to stay to the front, and there was another problem, because they didn't issue any food whatsoever. So unless you had the courage to leave the column and grab food if you saw something passing by that remotely looked like food, because peasants were still working in the fields, and we were passing villages, we're not passing any cities at all, and we're passing farms. At night, some nights were spent just at the roadside. So what we did was to keep watch on the guards. When the guards went to sleep, we went on. We tried to get off the death march, and some of us anyway. And one night I got into I think it was a pigsty. I can't remember what it was now. Well, I got into a chicken house one night and found eggs. Yes, and one night I got into a pigsty, and we fell into a manure, and all kind of things that happened, but we always had to get back to the column. Well, one morning, we were still walking, and we were obviously walking along towards the Czechoslovakian frontier, because we could see the mountains in front of us, and gradually we came to this mountain range, and we had to climb the path. It was only one path they took us, because that was, everything else was choked with refugees and the same military convoys. And of course, also the retreating German army, you see, which we didn't know. Anyway, we were walking along this mountain path, and I'm sort of in the advanced group because I always felt, you know, we've got to keep to the front. Very dangerous to lag behind. And people started discarding, you know, throwing their stuff up because you couldn't carry anything. And the guards wouldn't carry their own stuff. They used to hand it over for people to carry. And we used to hand it down the column. And nobody wanted to be last, to be left with this, you know. So we kept staying to the front if we could. And as we climbed this path, we suddenly came to the summit. And it was quite flat. It was a huge grass area. And that was a very early dawn when we got to the top. And when we got to the top, it was the most incredible sight. There were all full of German carts, horse and carts, and they were still asleep. And, you know, they had kind of canvases over these carts. It was almost like sort of gypsy carts. And there were cattle there. There was all sorts of things there. And it just took us half a minute to weigh up the situation. We saw all these carts there. And we said, right, off, go. And, you know, some of us in the front there, we threw ourselves at these carts, at these Germans, the Germans who were asleep there, tore their canvas off, and they had food hanging up, all hanging from this canvas. And we, sausages and all sorts of things hanging there. And we grabbed some of that, and I remember I grabbed the bucket, because I didn't know what was inside, but that had to be food. Grabbed this bucket, handed this to my mother, and it was a bucket of lard. Of all things, just lard. But, you know, well, my mother was overjoyed. She said, we're going to put our feet in and we smear our hands because it will keep us from the cold. You know, she said, it's a marvellous thing, marvellous. It doesn't matter if we can't eat it, we can use it. And, of course, when the guards realised, obviously, they didn't know what was on the top, I suppose, because they wouldn't have taken us there. And there was the most incredible chaos, you know, everybody running around and the Germans screaming because they didn't expect the prisoners to overrun them. And the cattle were sort of bolting in all directions. Well, some of us were milking the cows. I milked the bull. Because I thought this was a great big cow, but because of I didn't know. And I was kicked and thrown to the side. And my mother said, what are you doing? This is a bull. I know. And anyway, we still had our little mugs and things, and we, you know, milked these things to get milk. Well, by the time the guards collected their thoughts, they couldn't shoot because there were all the civilians there, but, you know, there was a lot of beating going on. And we grabbed what we could and rejoined this column, and then we sort of descended. But of course, the next lot still had to come up, so I don't know what happened there. We were sort of the advance party at that time. The next night, I remember, we slept in a coal mine. But we were quite pleased about it because it was quite warm. Because we had one or two nights, we were just on the frozen ground. And it was incredibly cold. Unless you could, let's say, keep check on the guards and run into a farm somewhere or a barn or something like that. Now, what happened on the death march was that a lot of people died because they didn't take any chances. They were afraid to stray away from the column and try and get food. Well, if you couldn't get the food, you know, if you couldn't find food, if you were not prepared to take a risk, you were dead anyway because there was no food handed out. I think I did say to you that some carts were passing by now and again, and we used to throw ourselves onto these carts, onto the peasant carts. Potatoes and cabbages and whatever, but of course, if you were caught, they were shooting as well. The guards, if something was passing by and anyone strayed from the column, but we did nonetheless take a chance. And I was hit on the head with a rifle butt at that stage. Unfortunately, when I was hit by the rifle butt, I don't recall anything else because I think I was knocked out, and because fortunately my friend carried me, and so did my mother, and I was carried for some time until I came to. It was only sort of really after the war that it transpired that I actually had a fractured skull, and I still got a hole, which, I've got a hole in my head, but I hadn't found any side effects from it. I think I would have had them by now, but it took a few days to recover because you didn't think of that. As long as you, you know, you could walk, that's all you were concerned about at that stage, whether you had a pain or whether you're cold or you're hot, it didn't matter. You had to walk, walk, walk. And my mother used to say, well, we're not tired, we're just going to look at the scenery. It's beautiful scenery. She used to call it the Saxony, the Swiss Saxony or something it's called like this. And she said, just look at the beautiful scenery. Don't think of what's happening here. Just look, look. The mountains there, just like home, mountains, can you see? And you know, she tried to distract us like this. Anyway, we were on this march for, probably over a couple of weeks. But you can't really say, because we were not walking at a particular pace, you know, because there's so many people, and ever so often, the whole column had to stop. Because the guards would shout "Austreten," which meant everybody could go and relieve themselves. You see, so that was at a certain point, and then the whole thing just sort of stopped. You see, and people had to relieve themselves just where they were, and then we'd march on again. Anyway, we got to over to the other side of the mountain range, onto the Czechoslovakian side, and they led us. We tried to ask the guards, because there were only guards at that time, and quite elderly men. But they were not the MSS, they were just ordinary soldiers. And they didn't know where they were going. They said, we believe there's a camp here somewhere. Anyway, they led us down the other side to this very first camp we came to. And it was, I know it by two names, Parschnitz and Trautenau, I think that they were one adjoining the other. But it was, again, a sub-camp of this very main base camp, Gross Rosen. Again, people were working in factories, in the nearby plants, munition plants. But when we got there, I, for some unknown reason, managed to come out with one gold sovereign. Yeah. But what I did forget to tell you, that eventually my diamonds were removed. I no longer had my diamonds in my teeth. I did need those at one stage. And in Auschwitz, eventually I managed to go to what they used to call the dental station. And they extracted my teeth, and I actually had those diamonds and traded them in. Eventually, this dentist got them out from my back teeth, and I did trade them in. And this was part of the stuff that helped to get us onto the list. So that's I lost all these diamonds, but I had a gold sovereign. Why I just had one gold sovereign, I don't know. I mean, I could have had more, because one you could hide, but more it was actually too dangerous, because we were stripped and in the sauna before leaving Auschwitz, and I think I put it in my mouth just while we were being deloused or when they took the stuff off. So if I would have had a lot of stuff, I couldn't have brought it out anyway. So I had this one gold sovereign. When we got to this town of this camp in Parschnitz, I managed to get a loaf, a whole loaf of bread. I think that must have been the first time since 1938 or something that I had a whole loaf in my hand. One or two other girls also managed to, from the Auschwitz people, managed to get some bread. Now, again, no food was issued after the next evacuation. And if I wouldn't have had this one loaf, I can't see how we could have withstood the next part of the journey. Because the very next day, the people who were still alive, I mean, I don't know how many people, we've lost an awful lot of people during this death march. Some tried to escape, but of course it was useless escaping, because if you would have been found, you would have been just shot immediately. We felt you're safer in a group than you are on your own. A lot of people were lagging behind, some gave up and were shot, some just died at the roadside. A lot of people were not in very good condition anymore. But we were still 100 of us intact. And they loaded us onto into coal trucks. The open coal trucks, a train, in fact, the goods train, is transpired to the coal trucks, to the waste, in fact. we were loaded in, and one part of the truck was marked out with, in fact, a guard. In every truck had a guard, one guard. So our guard made a chalk enclosure for himself, and he said, anyone who steps over this line is going to get shot. Right. So he had this one third of the truck, or the coal truck, and then perhaps 50 of us had the other part of the truck where there wasn't enough room to actually sit down. You could just stand, and if we wanted to sit, we should take it in turns. Well, I loaded us into these trucks, and if my mother sat down or I sat down, we should sit down on this loaf, you know, because just to hang on to this loaf, because some of us still had it, but some of us didn't have it, and there wasn't enough to dish out for everybody. So everybody had to look after their own little family. So my mother and I lived on this loaf, and gradually we used to sort of just tear off a little piece and eat it, and that is all we had for 8 days and 7 nights. This train started out in Czechoslovakia, and 8 days later, we had gone to as far as the frontier with the Netherlands, right across Germany. Now, because we were always taken along sidings and along side routes, we never actually ever passed any towns. It was always through the countryside. We were also mistaken for military transport, and we were bombed by the Allies. Well, they hit the truck, and when there was an air raid, the guards dismounted, but we were not allowed to dismount. We had to stay in the trains. The guards dismounted, and, you know, they had to hold in the guns, and if anybody would have come out, they would have shot us. So we just, you know, we just cheered in the back when the bombs were flying. Well, the trucks were bombed, and part of the train, I think, and so we found landmarks that we'd seen days previously. We said, that's funny, I thought we'd seen this about 3 days ago. So we were going backwards and forwards and in circles, and it took 8 days. Now, sometimes when the truck will train, it's tough for a long time. Some of us tried to dismount, because sometimes you saw piles of cabbages or whatever lying at the side of the track. So we tried to get down, you know, to try and get something. Sometimes the guard would let actually somebody climb down if the train had stopped. But what they wouldn't let us do is to go out and relieve ourselves. That all had to be done while you were sitting on the edge. You were actually held by somebody and do it over the edge, because there was no provision inside the truck. And there was, you know, they wouldn't let us out of the trucks. And because there wasn't any drink, but there was heavy snowfalls at that time, and we actually collected snow. So we had something to drink, and my mother and I just had this one loaf. But because there were people that actually starved during these seven or 8 days, because it was just too long to be totally without any food at all. But all the hundreds of us survived this journey. Now, when they took us out of the train, which was in a forest, in fact, it was a small station called Pocta, P-U-R-T-A, Westfalica. We realized we were somewhere in Westphalia. It wasn't all that far from the Netherlands, somewhere on the Netherlands, somewhere there. Suddenly the train stopped, alles raus, out, you know, everybody out. Well, a lot of people couldn't get out anymore by that time. We lost a lot of people on that train because, you know, they simply just were too exhausted because of having been totally without any food whatsoever for 8 days. Well, those of us that could still walk and get up were marched off to the forest. Now, in the forest was a clearing. It was realized after the war, it was the forest called the Teutoburger Wald. But I've never actually found the station on the map. although there is a particular landmark there. There's a huge monument, I believe, because we have to pass this monument. And I spoke to someone and they say that there's quite a famous monument in that forest. So I know it was somewhere within this forest. There was a clearing in the forest with a small camp. And those of us that could actually still walk were marched off to this forest. And this camp was occupied by Dutch women from the Netherlands, because it was so near the border. And, you know, we said, well, what do you do here? What do you do here? They're working in a cave. Well, apparently there was an underground factory somewhere in this forest. And the very next day, we were marched off to the forest. And there, you could see nothing at all. You just saw an opening into a cave.